What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host Thomas Drantz should be arriving on the show momentarily here. Drantz, of course, covers the team for The Athletic. That's what he's doing right now on the road, braving L.A. traffic, trying to get to the L.A. Kings practice facility, and he'll hop on this show as soon as he is able to. We expect, again, just scant minutes here for Drantz to join the show. I am broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, working together with you in step. 650, of course, is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Lots coming up on the show today. Of course, the Canucks will practice down in L.A. That's at 1. So Drantz is going to be on the first hour of the show. Then he's going to do his other job and cover Canucks practice. And in that second hour, we'll have a chance to see if any news comes out of Canucks practice, of course, as well. I'll also be joined by Adam Kierzenblatt from the Hockey News covering the Canucks and also the WHL for the Hockey News at 1 o'clock. And then I'll have an open segment to wrap things up at 1:30. Make sure you get your texts in for that now, of course. And text throughout the show, of course, with me doing it at least partially solo here with Drantz on the road covering the team. So we'll get Drantz here connected soon. He's going to be covering practice for the Canucks when it starts at 1 today. Adam Kierzenblatt of the Hockey News joins me at 1 as well on the show. Lots to get into, though, so let's go straight to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, February 25th. And the headline is, as mentioned, the Canucks get back to work, back to practice in L.A. This is ahead of another set of back-to-back games. They play the Kings tomorrow and then the Anaheim Ducks on Thursday. So after they go 0-for on the back-to-back over the weekend, 0 out of possible 4 points against the Golden Knights and Utah. They get another chance at it to see what they can do against a Kings team that's playing really well all of a sudden. Had a big win last night against Vegas. Quentin Byfield with 4 assists. Drew Doughty looks rejuvenated coming out of the Four Nations break. So a really good LA team that's playing really well presents a tough challenge for the Canucks tomorrow. And we can dig more into that matchup on the show tomorrow. But I think, you know, as we look ahead to practice today, there's a few big questions. Now, number one, of course, is going to be Quinn Hughes' status. He's missed the last 6 games, and that bridges the gap, the Four Nations gap. So this is a fairly significant injury absence now for Quinn Hughes. To say that the Canucks desperately, desperately miss him and desperately need him back in the lineup is obviously a massive understatement. We all saw what it looked like over the weekend, just how devoid of dynamic playmaking ability they are without Quinn Hughes in the lineup. And, you know, it's funny, you go back to the few games they played before the Four Nations and there were some higher shot totals, right? Filip Hedl doing some dangerous things off the rush, and that was without Quinn Hughes in the lineup. But we also understand just how incredibly difficult it will be for this team to consistently generate shots, scoring chances, goals without Quinn Hughes in the lineup. So going into a tough matchup against a pretty good LA Kings team tomorrow, man, it would be a huge, huge lift to get Quinn Hughes, to get the captain back into the lineup. And we'll see. We'll see if we get an answer to that one way or another when the Canucks do practice at 1 o'clock. And man, again, it would go a long, long way. But beyond just Quinn Hughes' status, you know, the question I'm really curious to see today at practice is, What buttons does Rick Tocchet try to push to get more offense from his team? How does he react? How does he respond? How does he tinker with the lineup? What's the message to the players? All of that. What does Rick Tocchet do to try to make it look different tomorrow than it did against Vegas and Utah over the weekend? And it's a tricky question because I'm not really sure that there are lineup tweaks that can fix this. You know, I love talking about line combinations and jotting them down on the napkin and trying to figure out, okay, who works best with who. That's awesome. That's one of my favorite things to do. But sometimes you can't line up, tweak your way out of a situation. And I'm not sure that, you know, bumping up Nils Höglander is all of a sudden going to make the Canucks look dramatically different as an attacking team than they did over the weekend. Same thing with Connor Garland. I'm not sure how many different options there are that Rick Tocchet has to play with here. Having said that, he's still got to try. He's still the coach. This is a team in a playoff race. And even if they don't get Quinn Hughes back tomorrow, those are a big 2 points up for grabs. He can't just throw his hands up and say, what do you want me to do? I don't have the horses. It's incumbent on him to keep trying to find answers. And I'm curious to see what form that takes. If Tocchet talks about it after practice today, what we see at practice that maybe gives us some insight into how he's trying to address the lack of offense for this team. All right. He has made it through LA traffic. He is set up. He's ready to go. Now joining me on the show, my co-host, Thomas Drance. What's going on, man?
Guerrilla radio right off the interstate system and onto your airwaves. I've arrived at the Toyota Performance Center in El Segundo. The LA Kings are on the ice right now, and the Canucks will be on the ice now. They're supposed to be on the ice at 1. Sounds like they might go on a little bit early, Jamie.
Okay.
So we'll figure it out in real time. And we haven't discussed this because I've literally been driving all morning, but I might even try and do some of the show while watching practice and try and do it live and stick around for as long as I can here. So should be an interesting one. Bear with us, but at least our connection sounds great.
Yeah,
let's go.
Got a little bit of an echo there, but the Wi-Fi quality. No, I think it's like literally the room.
I think that's the room.
Yeah, I think it's the room. I don't think it's anything you do with the connection to the equipment, but it's all right.
Sorry,
it's going to work. You're on location. This is what you got to deal with sometimes. And as you said, maybe we'll get live practice updates with Thomas Drance. What could be more exciting than that?
So stay tuned.
I was just teeing it up, right? Looking ahead to practice here and, you know, an hour or less, as you just said. And obviously, number one question is Quinn Hughes' status, right? Like we all understand they desperately, to say the least, need him back in the lineup. But you may have heard as I was just kind of teasing it there, I'm also just curious to see how Rick Tocchet approaches the kind of current pressing problem that we all identified coming out of the weekend with the team, which is just the extreme lack of dangerous attacking options that this team has right now, an extreme lack of punch that they have, especially in their top six. And as I was saying, like, I don't know if there's any, you know, brilliant combination of lines and personnel here that's going to solve it. But I also know that Rick Tocchet has to keep trying to find answers, and I'm curious to see what those answers are that he tries to find, and maybe we get a little glimpse of that at practice today.
Yeah, you know, I you'd hope so. I think they do need to switch some things up in terms of the lines. I do think Nils Höglander has to go up at this point. And it's frustrating, I think, because the truth is, whatever the fancy stats say, like Nils Höglander did not have a good game on Sunday night in Salt Lake City, right? Like there were just moments of defensive, not defensive, overall hockey IQ issues that were manifest if you were watching it. That said, he's one of the few options in this lineup with juice, and you can't have him be playing with Teddy Bluger, who, I mean, can't find the Canucks don't find the back of the net with Teddy Bluger on the ice at all right now, right? I mean, he's fifth among forwards in 5-on-5 ice time. He obviously hasn't scored. This is in 23 games since the Christmas break, okay? They've been outscored 13-3 with him on the ice, right? I mean, you can't have one of your more reliable potential sources of offense tethered at this moment to Bluger, in my view. Now, you could do it, I think, if you're trying to catch lightning in a bottle with something like Bluger, Joshua, and Garland, right?
Yep.
I have time for that. I think right now, though, you know, this team's predicated on having forward depth, and I just don't think they have enough depth to actually pull that off. So, you know, if I was to draw it up, what I'd love to see today, honestly, I think it'd be something like Suter with Pettersson and Besser on the top line. I'd want to see Höglander with Hedl and O'Connor, just like one line that can get up and go. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you get some rush offense off that. Just three guys with some real transitional juice together. reunite that Bluger, Garland, Joshua line and hope that you can find lightning in a bottle. I don't know if you will, but we know what that line did for such a large segment of last season. And then, yeah, you're just punting fourth line minutes. It's Amon at center. It's, you know, whatever else you need to do there to flesh out your forward.
I don't think we've accounted for DeBrusque, so.
Oh, okay. So maybe it's Suter then as your fourth line center, and you hope that he can carry, you know, Archdeep Baines and ex-winger, you know. And honestly, if you end up going 11-7, so be it, right? Like, at this point, I just think you need to do what you can to load up your top line or your top nine. And so, yeah, maybe it's Bluger who stays on the fourth line then, right? Maybe it's Suter with Garland and Joshua, and there you go. But I'd love to see some creativity here from the Canucks coaching staff. I expect we're going to get a meaningful juggle. So, given how this weekend's games went. And then that sort of brings us back to the Tocchet conversation, right? The conversation about, you know, Tocchet coach teams and their lack of offense. You know, what happened to this team's offensive production year over year? And this one's frustrating for me, Jamie, because let's be totally real. This team was one of the highest scoring teams in the league last season. And what was my constant commentary on it?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't buy their offense.
Yep.
They don't generate enough. And so I think if you weren't looking at it like that, if you were just looking at this as this high octane, high scoring team that their results suggested they were, as opposed to divorcing all the bounces they were getting and all the shooting efficiency stuff from what you were actually seeing in terms of how often they generated shots, where those shots were coming from, and how this team actually played, what we're seeing now isn't a huge surprise. And this is where I do think teams get into, you know, organizations, not even teams, like forget this current edition of the Canucks. I mean, from an Alvin Rutherford perspective, from an ownership perspective, from a fans watching this team perspective, is you have a team that's results are out of line with their actual quality over a relatively short sample of games. And for the Canucks, it was like 50 games last year where their offense looked really dynamic. And then 30 games into the playoffs where you could see the seams of what we're seeing now in terms of what this team was able to generate. And then when the results bubble bursts, right, people are like, well, it's fallen off so much because of XYZ, and that's on the coach,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's like no, I mean, to an extent, everything's on the coach. He's ultimately responsible for what we're seeing on the ice. Don't get me wrong. But no, this is sort of a baseline level that this team had, and when you remove JT Miller from the equation for 10 games for personal leave, and Brock Besser gets a head injury in midseason and takes a little bit of time to find his rhythm, and you lose Filip Hronek for 6 weeks, and really things have been spiraling offensively for this team since Christmas. And I don't think it's a huge shock that, like, Quinn Hughes sustained that knock right before Christmas in that game against San Jose. Pettersson, we know, left the lineup for a bit in that game right before Christmas. So, you know, I think there's a lot of extenuating circumstances here. I think this team's offensive baseline was already low. And, you know, I do think that we're in a moment where, in my view anyway, this team's construction and talent level and the sort of choice between defending and attacking that has long been my bugaboo when covering this team. You know, it's not that it's not on Tocchet. I just don't think you can overreact to the idea that he doesn't know what he's doing coaching offense, right? And one thing about this that I just, like, can't shake is we just rooted for one of the most memorable victories in the history of Canadian hockey
mm-hmm.
10 days ago. And Tocchet's job on that coaching staff was shaded to the offensive side of the game. He was handling offensive zone set plays, draw strategy, right? Like, he was working with McDavid and Marner on creating offense, right? Not just off of draws, but generally speaking, right? Diagnosing what the other team was trying to do and coming up with suggestions and working with some of the best players in the world. This is a coach who Hockey Canada, right, with the stakes as high as they were during the Four Nations tournament, turned to as an assistant on that staff. And knowing who Tocchet is and the defensive reputation and on, tasked him with the offensive side of the game. And now the conversation is going to be that the reigning Jack Adams winner, who just won gold, working in an offensive capacity on that coaching staff, doesn't know how to manufacture offense because Clayton Keller turned 22 after he left Arizona and exploded offensively. Like, it, the conversation, for me anyway, and I don't want to do the old, does this core get another coach thing, but, like, the conversation, in my mind, shouldn't start at Tocchet. It should start at, is this team good enough? Do they have enough talent? Do they have enough aggregate talent in this lineup to score sufficiently to make their defensive solidity stand up? Obviously, they haven't across the last two games, but arguably for much of the season, it's been an issue.
Yeah, and I think the absence of Quinn Hughes, and especially in those two games over the weekend, even though obviously he's a blue liner, but it actually puts the lack of offensive talent up front in sharper relief, right? Because we're so used to seeing him carry so much of the burden offensively for this team. And, you know, as Reg texted in as well, guys, there's no point in going over this. As long as we have this version of Elias Pettersson, this team has zero chance at offense. And you take out, so you trade JT Miller, Quinn Hughes is out of the lineup, and then you're getting this version of Elias Pettersson. And as I said on the show yesterday, like, all of a sudden your forward group looks like an expansion forward group in a way, right? Where you have good players, but you're missing the top layer of really dynamic guys who can elevate their teammates to kind of make it all work together. Like, Brock Besser, really good player. Jake DeBrusque, really good player. Filip Hedl, I like some of the things he can do, but, you know, when those are your three best players, like, you're going, or three best forwards, you're going to be very limited offensively. And again, like, I think you're right about, okay, they have to change the lines up, you know, get Hoglander up. Do you move Connor Garland up as well if you're punting on the third line and just get all your best players in the top six? I think that's the way to go. I'm not sure how much of a difference it makes, though, right? Like, even if those lines you laid out earlier in the show, it's like, okay, I still don't know who's doing the bulk of the creating, at least at the forward spot. If Quinn Hughes is on the ice, he can do it. But other than that, yeah, I don't know where it's coming from.
Scoring in minutes that Quinn Hughes isn't on the ice was such a massive issue for this team in the playoffs. So I think this team's punchlessness offensively is really exacerbated or magnified by Hughes' absence at the moment. You know, I do think it'll look different materially once Hughes gets back. Although I am a little, you know, and I don't want to use the concerned word, but I'm curious to see exactly what version of Hughes we're going to get, given that, you know, this has been a 3.5 week absence now, and a 3.5 week absence through the Four Nations tournament, and those games were super high stakes, right? You know, it's like, you know, there's no load management in terms of Hughes deciding to not compete at the Four Nations or to be airdropped into the final or what have you, right? Like, this is clearly something more significant than that that's been holding him back a little bit more than that, from, you know, a comfort, from a pain management level. I don't know exactly, but, you know, from something that would keep him out of the lineup this long, even if it is just, what, I guess, are we at 8 games that he's missed?
Six, so, I think, even.
Six, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it feels like forever. I don't have a lot of time for what this looks like offensively without Hughes. But that was true early in the season, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's been true the whole time. I just think it's magnified in his absence. And look, it's going to be magnified, too, in Southern California, because the Kings are the best defensive team in hockey. Like, this is the hardest team to generate against in the sport right now that the Canucks will face tomorrow. And then they face an Anaheim Ducks team, which obviously lacks the sort of shutdown venom that the Kings possess, but nonetheless, you know, plays low event hockey, right? Doesn't take a lot of risks, is structurally sound. In fact, too structurally sound given the composition of their roster, right? So, you know, this is a pretty tough back-to-back set that the team's gonna deal with this week, just from the standpoint of, like, chances are hard to create anyway when you're in this part of the world. And right now, that doesn't sound great, given what the Canucks look like with the puck.
No, especially that LA matchup tomorrow, as you said, considering the performance we saw in Utah, and with Quinn Hughes' status still up in the air, that could be a pretty difficult one for the Canucks. So we'll go on to the broadsheet here, and I didn't have a chance to get this in the show yesterday, but you know, Rick Dhaliwal yesterday on his show on Donnie and Dolly saying, don't rule out Brock Besser signing an extension. Following it up today, the term remains the issue. Besser wants 7 or 8 years. The Canucks want 5 to 6. And it feels like we're still in that holding pattern here with the trade deadline now, what, 9 days away or so on March 7th. This is kind of where we're going to be, I think, until something breaks one way or another with Brock Besser. I will say I'm seeing a lot of the take of, you know, well, what, like, you can't trade Besser. I mean, they're already struggling to score so much. How are you going to replace him? This team desperately needs offense. You can't trade a guy like Brock Besser. And I don't necessarily disagree with that take. Like, that, you're not wrong. It's going to hurt the team's offense even more if you trade Brock Besser. He's a very difficult player to replace. But I think sometimes people stop there in their analysis, and it's like, well, they need goals, and Brock Besser can score, so you have to sign him. You can't let yourself let that reasoning walk you into a bad contract, especially when you're not a contending team. It would be different if you were like, yeah, you know what? We have concerns about giving him the eighth year, but we need him in the lineup to go win a cup right now. If you're a contending team, okay, maybe you can think like that. When you're not a contending team, I don't think you can get too hung up on just, oh, this guy's a good player and we have him right now, so we got to do everything we can to keep him. I think you end up making mistakes like that. Not saying it's going to be easy to replace Brock Besser. I'm not saying that at all. It's going to be difficult, but sometimes when you're in the position the Canucks are, you have to have the guts that you can go do the difficult thing and figure out a way to replace him and get the value you get back in a trade. So I just wanted to put that out there because we've seen it before in this market, and I think it has led to mistakes, and we're seeing it again. The fear of losing the player cannot dictate that you sign a mistake contract or that you do an own rental thing, right? Like, you still have to be so disciplined in these situations.
Amen to that, brother. Like, testify. Testify, Jamie Dodd. The truth is that one way or another, you either come to terms with Brock Besser on an extension that actually makes sense, right? That actually has a shot to provide you with, you know, maybe not surplus value given that these are all UFA years, but actual value, right?
Yep.
And if this team is, you know, not a contender in the short term, right? And I don't think they're ready to sort of accept that, but we do know that the organization believes that they're in a transitional phase post JT Miller trade. You know, that makes the term of this next deal really difficult because, as we know, when we discuss those contracts, right, the risk you take on late is really only worth it if you're mining, you know, something that matters in the early half, the first half of that sort of deal, the late 20s and early 30s years of the player you're signing. So that is a complicating factor. But look, Besser's a good player. Besser's an upright presence in any organization. You know, scores clutch goals. He's improved his game. He's adapted. And you know, he's super versatile as a power play weapon. I like all of those things about Brock Besser. And I think it makes sense if you're able to keep him, you know, at a somewhat reasonable number. If you're looking at 6 years, if you're looking at, you know, south of $7.5 million, I think that's a deal you really strongly consider. But I think once you get into 7-8 years, I think once you get into $8-8.5 million, you know, and I'm not sure if Besser is going to be able to demand all of that, but I, you know, would anyone be shocked by 7 times 8 in free agency if he made it to July 1? I don't think so.
Not
so
at all.
He has to weigh that pretty heavily in making the decision here. You know, you just either have to get a deal that works for you locked in before March 7th, or you have to make the difficult decision and trade him for assets. I think the only real mistake here, because it's complicated, it's a good player, you know, there's obviously, if it's a really bad contract, that's a mistake. But so that's one mistake. You got to avoid that landmine, and then you got to avoid the landmine of the own rental thing. And I think provided that you basically come out of this with any other outcome, I think that's the best you can do in this situation.
All right. Lineup notes, as mentioned, the team practices at 1 today. As I already said, Quinn Hughes' status, is he regular participant, full participant, non-contact jersey? What does he do on the ice? How does he look? What do we hear from Hughes and Tockett after the game? That's going to be the thing to watch at practice, but also the potential lineup juggles, who comes in, who comes out, all of that. We expect the Canucks to get on the ice sometime in the next half hour here, or at least at 1 o'clock. So we'll get you those updates as they come. Playoff and standings update, no change. Okay, of course, only 2 games on the NHL slate yesterday, none of them really relevant to the Canucks, so still 77% chance to make the playoffs per Dom's model. If you're doing some scoreboard watching tonight with the Canucks idle, the Flames start their really, really difficult road trip in Washington against the Caps, who just can't stop scoring goals right now. So the Flames are heavy underdogs in Washington, but Utah hosting the Blackhawks, so they are heavy favorites. So a couple of relevant games for the Canucks on the schedule tonight. All right, that is the whiteboard today. We will take a break. Keep sending your texts in, and we will get to some of them on the other side here. Denny's True North Taste awaits with Denny's 100% Canadian beef burgers made with new shredded iceberg lettuce on a brioche bun and all the classic ingredients you love. More Canucks talk on the way here on Sportsnet 650.